Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Viewing Angles. It's me, your A-host, Dan Leo, and with me, as always...
It's the B-host, Robert Mecki.
And together, we're going to be talking about some invisible topics today.
Mainly
the Invisible Man, the new horror Blumhouse flick from Leigh
Whannell.
Leigh Whannell. I love the Australians.
Aussies.
We're going to be talking about that a little bit later. And I think we're both pretty excited to talk about it.
Yeah. Get hyped.
But first, let's dive right into the box office. Luckily, The Invisible Man made its number one debut, grossing, what is this, four times its budget at $28 million.
This is just domestic, too. It made $50 million global.
Yeah, so this has already made money.
Yeah, on a $7 million budget.
This movie does not look like it was made for $7 million.
No.
But in the same way that Upgrade didn't look like it was made for like $5 million.
Yeah.
Leigh Whannell is very good with a tight budget.
Very good. I think that's just Blumhouse in general. Like they are a great studio. They put out a lot of trash, but it's all to support these smaller indie projects that shine through in the end.
Oh, yeah. They're perfect on giving filmmakers who wouldn't normally have a chance a few million bucks and then telling them to go crazy with it. So,
yeah, I think they're also just great at marketing. Like, they know exactly who to pander these movies to.
Yeah, no, I think they're very effective at a lot of different things. Upgrade was only made for $3 million, which
is
insane.
Insanity.
I love that movie. It's so good.
Yeah, Upgrade is fucking fantastic. Upgrade is the good Venom.
Yes. There's something talking in my head and making me kill stuff.
Yeah, just like The Invisible Man is the good Birds of Prey, Upgrade is the good Venom.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I guess I didn't. Yeah, all right, maybe. There's the haunting of an unseen villain in Harley Quinn, but that's just the Joker. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Except in this movie, you actually have emotional catharsis.
Yeah, I think it works out pretty well.
Yeah.
Coming in at number two is a movie with no emotional catharsis. It's Sonic the Hedgehog.
You clearly don't like Olive Garden that much.
I love Olive Garden. Wasn't too hot on Sonic the Hedgehog. It's fine. It's gonna be fine. It's already made $266 million off a $85 million budget, so it's made more than double its budget.
This is a franchise at this point. Like, confirmed. Yeah.
Right, which is, do you think this will reach like anywhere close to like $1 billion or?
No, not a billion, but I think it's going to be up, like, I would see it finishing around like the 400 to 500 million mark.
Uh-huh.
Also, it had a pretty solid drop. Like, it's only 37% week over week.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Definitely. I mean, it was already down like a decent amount, I think. And this obviously isn't a super great week at the box office. Like, 28 million is great for a $7 million budget, but it's still not even like the most modest box office weekends. Usually you hit around $35 million for number one on a very average week.
Yeah.
But this is...
Now, honestly, I think more and more, like, the box office is only going to look worse, I think, as the year goes on, mainly because of coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. I think these numbers are going to be steadily dropping. I think a lot of studio big releases are going to be disappointing this summer, mainly because I think that, you know, conditions outside of a studio's control are going to push those numbers down. I'm really curious to see what the turnout is for, like, Black Widow, for like the big staple blockbusters this summer.
Oh, yeah. Or even there's another big one, The Quiet Place Part 2. I know.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's big, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's projected to hit like a $60 to $70 million opening weekend.
I'll be impressed if it does end up doing that.
Me as well. We've also got The Hunt coming up, which I'm very interested to see.
That's another Blumhouse movie, I think, right?
Is that Blumhouse? No, it's Universal Pictures.
Oh, okay. Just I wonder what the budget is for that.
The budget is $14 million. So that sounds like a Blumhouse production.
That'll be fine.
Right. I'm just like curious because, yeah, I guess there's not for a while, which almost makes it worse because we think that the coronavirus is going to get like worse before it gets better. Right.
Yes.
A Quiet Place isn't until March 20th. So like the day, the weekend after St. Patrick's Day, for you insane people who celebrate St. Patrick's Day after St. Patrick's Day. And then we don't really have anything until Mulan, March 27th.
Oh, that's going to bomb. Dude, I bet you Disney was banking on the Chinese box office, and China has already started shutting down movie theaters.
Ooh, yeah, that's too bad. And then April 3rd, Mulan the New deserves Mutants. It. Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I feel like we might be heading for like a record low first two quarters of movie going.
Yeah. You know what that means? Recession time, baby.
Yeah. Save your money for stocks now.
Yeah. So, also, buy a car once the recession hits.
That's the dream. Coming in number three, speaking of recessions, let's recede back into the wild with Call of the Wild at a total gross of $46 million. And this weekend, it only made $13 million, which is a pretty decent drop.
I thought this movie came out this weekend.
No, this movie came in number one last weekend.
Really?
It just barely came in number two. But yeah, not looking too great. Apparently this movie is going to lose like $50 million. So
yeah, maybe if they didn't spend so much money CGing a fucking dog into the movie.
What are they going to do? Get a regular dog?
Yeah. It's worked for a shit ton of other movies.
But dogs are so hard to train. There's no Hollywood dogs out there.
They literally could have just called up the producer for a dog's purpose and been like, hey, man, how'd you do this?
We need one of the dogs.
Yeah. I think Harrison Ford actually requested to act in front of a CG dog because he just wanted to, like, watch a man grovel at his feet.
I definitely believe it. Harrison Ford seems like a guy who would hold a grudge against the human race. All right. Now that we're done with the box office, let's get in the highs, the lows, and the toss-ups of the week. Starting with the high is the new Candyman trailer. Rob, you got a chance to check this out, right?
I did. Yeah. That Destiny's Child. It's not even a cover, right? It's just like a slowed down version.
Yeah, it just sounds slowed down without the instrumentation.
Yeah.
Which great trailer. Great trailer.
That's have you seen the original Candyman?
I have not. It's on my list.
So I don't know. Like, apparently this is held in very high regard.
It's a classic.
I've never seen it. So I don't know why. The only thing I remember about this movie is seeing the VHS cover in Blockbuster when I was a kid.
Yeah. And thinking what? They called it Candyman?
Yeah. Never watched it. I'm like, oh, that's a bee crawling into somebody's eyeball. That's disturbing. But I never saw this movie. I do want to watch it now because in my old age, I've heard that people fucking love this movie, that it's a very well-respected horror film. So I do want to check it out at some point. And this movie looks pretty neat. It's not like, I think, amazing to me. Like, I'll see it because it's a horror film. I love horror, and it looks like it's good horror from Jordan Peele, no less. But yeah, I'm not as hyped for this movie as a lot of people in my film circles are.
Yeah, I think that I love Yahya Abdul-Mateen too.
I loved him in
Watchmen. I'm glad that he was there. I'm glad he's getting more work.
He's my Black Manta.
Yeah, the movie looks like good enough to be like, this could be a hit. You know, this could be the next, Get Out or Invisible Man, any of these recent, like A Quiet Place, recent like horror flicks, blockbusters. And the trailer was good. It looks like it's going to be pretty spooky, but not too spooky.
I just want it to be incredibly violent.
I think you're going to get that.
Okay, that's all I'm asking for.
Yeah. I'm very interested to see this. Very interested to see the first one. It sounds like this is like a sequel, not quite like a reboot, but I don't really know how it'll work.
And I think that like the original Candyman is cast in this as well.
Interesting. So does he convert people? Like, that's what I just need to see the original movie.
That's kind of what that's what it sounds like. It sounds like he's just getting someone to kill white people. At least that's what the trailer kind of showed to me. And the description, at least from IMDb, is that Candyman returns to the part of his town that has been heavily gentrified. So I'm like, oh, okay, so
interesting.
We get to see him kill a shit ton of white people.
Right. The because it's based in Chicago. It's based in like Chicago projects.
Yeah.
So very interested to see, especially since gentrification is such a big issue in Chicago. As we all know, or at least if you're listening in Chicago, you know that is definitely a constant topic of discussion for people who live here. All right, well, let's get into the lows. We've got some sad news. I don't know if you're as affected by this as I am, Rob, but James Lipton from Inside the Actor Studio fame has died. And I remember really loving Inside the Actor Studio and getting like a very interesting look into what this profession is that we kind of have all built our lives around watching. I thought it was very cool. I thought he was a great interviewer. And I can't think of really a episode of that I watched that I did not like. I remember after James Gandolfini died that they put on the episode where he interviews him, and very, very interesting stuff. But yeah, that's what I got. Did you ever get to watch Inside the Actor Studio?
I've seen like a couple YouTube videos of like some famous actors. I was definitely not a regular watcher. I think the one that really stands out to me was there was like this, the one he did with Sean Penn, I think it was.
Yeah, he's done two maybe just one with Sean Penn.
I think Sean Penn like made a comment about how like it probably wasn't on the show, but he was talking about how nobody like people who go to Inside the Actor Studio like don't go on to become big stars. But there's that episode where Bradley Cooper was in the audience. Yeah. And he asked the question. I was like, oh, shit, that's pretty fucking cool.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing him as a regular boy.
Yeah, that is a memorable moment because I think that there's a few there might be like two episodes where Bradley Cooper's in the audience and he gets to ask a question, and he asks like a very insightful, like detailed question, and you're like, that guy might be something one day, maybe. But
yeah, no, Bradley Cooper, he's a real man.
Yeah.
But I think honestly, I was just surprised. I didn't realize that this host, James Lipton, was that old.
Yeah, right. 93.
Yeah.
Must have been dying his hair. Yeah.
Jesus.
He looked pretty good. I mean, I hadn't seen him in a long time, but
yeah, was that show still running? Like, was it running when he died?
No, I don't believe so. I think it's been done for a while. I think they had somebody else go like in his stead, and they just were not really as good. I wonder. Yeah, went through seasons 1 through 23.
Holy shit.
Yeah, this is like a long time. I guess they were still airing episodes as of like 2019. So I wonder if there's like if he traded off presenting. But yeah.
Yeah, he must have.
It's too bad. Great guy. Loved watching the show.
Yeah, hopefully he left a fantastic legacy.
Yeah, hopefully we get to... Oh, so they had different hosts and different guests. So for the most recent season, they had people like Alec Baldwin, Jane Lynch, Pedro Pascal, Kelsey Grammer interviewing people like Willem Dafoe or Al Pacino.
Oh, they had other actors doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Was he ever an actor?
I assume he probably tried.
Yeah.
You know,
you think he was kind of like the professor from Barry.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. The first episode of season 23 was host Alec Baldwin and guest Henry Winkler.
Ooh.
So this could be worth a revisit. I'm sure I'm going to go hit up some YouTube clips after this podcast is done.
Yeah. Put it all on YouTube.
Put it all on YouTube. Now we've got the toss-up of the week, which we were discussing a little bit off mic, but No Time to Die, the latest James Bond movie, will be the longest-running Bond release ever.
I can't fucking wait.
It's
going to
be
so
over
excited.
2.5 hours long.
It should have been 3 hours. They should have just pulled an Endgame. Make it 3:01.
Is this going to be good? You seem excited for it.
I'm very excited for it because I love Cary Fukunaga. I think that Daniel Craig has been a fantastic James Bond for his entire run. And I think that there is, I'm hoping that it's this long because it seems like they really want a sense of finality to Daniel Craig's arc as Bond.
Yeah. It seems
like
this is like,
I think that it's going to be Dr. No. Like, is that confirmed? Like, is Rami Malek playing Dr. No?
I think it's been confirmed that that's not the case.
But they're gonna pull a fucking like Star Trek Into Darkness where it's like, right. Oh, he was Khan the whole time.
Yeah, he's definitely not Dr. No.
He's playing Dr. No.
Yeah, I'm very interested because it seems like this should be. It's weird that they started like remaking the idea of some of these characters, like Inspector, having Blofeld be introduced with this like origin. It's like different from the other Bonds, which had just like, oh yeah, you know, Blofeld, he's back at it again. This, yeah. Like, Spectre was, here is the origin of Blofeld.
I am the architect of all your pain.
Yeah, and it's like, so are they going to go with that trend and just reinvent an origin for another classic Bond villain?
Probably. I think so. I think that that is, like, a direction that they want to move in with Bond is to add, like, some sort of continuity. Add, like, a real sense of lore to the franchise.
Yeah.
And I think Skyfall did that incredibly well. But I also think you can change it with every different actor. Like, if they just built a contained universe for each new actor playing Bond, I'm totally cool with that.
I agree. Me as well. I'm excited. I really come out of a Bond movie thinking, man, I wish that was shorter. I really love James Bond, and I'm very excited to see what Cary Fukunaga comes up with this time.
Yeah, so. I'm excited because Cary Fukunaga does not seem like a man who compromises, because he's very, very willing to just leave projects if he cannot get his creative vision in place.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see what kind of vision he has for this franchise, because I know he has the technical ability. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious to see where he sees his entry in the James Bond legacy, and then also knowing this is Daniel Craig's final Bond performance, it adds an air of reverence to this that I hope pays off, but I do accept the idea that there is a lot of chance.
This could be a 3-hour long train wreck.
This could be a train wreck. This could easily be hot garbage, but I'm very much hoping against that.
Yeah. I think he's talented enough to make a good Bond film. I think the worst we get is like Spectre quality.
Yeah. Which Spectre is fine.
Yeah. Totally fine.
Totally fine.
But following up Skyfall, it really hurt because Skyfall is the best Bond film.
It is definitely top three.
What's above Skyfall? Our Majesty's Secret Service?
Potentially. The ones that I think you could make the argument would be from Rush with Love, Goldfinger, On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
GoldenEye.
GoldenEye is fun, but it's not. I don't know if it's like good.
It's like the only good Pierce Brosnan Bond film.
Yeah, which is not saying a whole lot.
I know.
Yeah. And then Casino Royale. I think those kind of five are the best of the best.
All shooing. God, Skyfall. I love Skyfall so much. I wonder how much Fukunaga is going to build on what Mendes has contributed to Daniel Craig's Bond lore so far.
Yeah, I wonder how this is going to fit in, or if it's really going to feel like a standalone, completely disconnected Bond. I feel like it can't do that because we've already confirmed that Lisa Du is coming back as her same title character.
Yep.
And
Jeffrey Wright's coming back.
Yeah. Blofeld is back. We've got an established continuity.
Yeah. That's why this movie's 3 hours.
Yeah, it's got so much content. Jeffrey Wright is actually has the longest tenure as Felix Leiter in any of the Bond runs, which is very interesting.
Wait, who did they have a Q in Quantum of Solace or Casino Royale?
In Casino Royale, John Cleese shows up very briefly to be Q just like injects him with like a tracking device. He has a cameo.
Because I know Ben Whishaw has been Q in like Skyfall, Spectre, and I'm guessing No Time to Die as well. Actually, no, we see him in the trailer too. Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. I love him as Q. What a great reimagining of the quartermaster.
Watch him become the next Bond.
That would be wild. I think Ben Whishaw is really great. I think he's been great in a lot of things, including Layer Cake, where he really gets one over on Bond. And A Very English Scandal, if you ever saw that.
I have not. Hugh Grant.
I like him
in Cloud Atlas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
he's so fucking good in Cloud Atlas. He's just good in everything.
Yes, definitely reminds me of the lead singer of the 1975, but I'm a big fan. I'm looking forward to this movie a lot. It comes out pretty soon. Comes out in April.
Ooh, I'm excited.
I gotta start working
my bladder out.
Yeah. Gotta hold.
Yeah. All right. I did it for Endgame.
Yeah, I know, right? I can't believe it. I drank so much coffee on that midnight release.
But it was just so enthralling.
Yeah, so I was having a weird time. You know, you have so much coffee in your body that you can't fall asleep, but your body really wants to fall asleep.
Yep.
That's how I was. Easily. All right, well, let's get into the movie of the moment, Invisible Man. I feel like this has been drumming up a lot of interest. Not only there's a lot of knowledge in it's in the public consciousness. People know about it. It's been getting good reviews.
Crazy good reviews.
And it was famously salvaged from the Dark Universe.
Yeah, the Johnny Depp.
Yeah, this was originally going to be a Johnny Depp vehicle.
How weird would... Yeah, they were going to turn the Invisible Man into a sympathetic villain, which I guess is like how the original story is supposed to go.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how that would have worked. I do think that this reframing of the story is the best way you could have done it in today's age. And I think I was excited for this film because when you take an IP like this that is so rote and traditional, I'm always curious to see what you can do to it to make it interesting. I think, like, you know, some people will take The Mummy and they'll go like the Dark Universe route, the Tom Cruise route, and try to make a fucking superhero movie out of it. That's not how it works. That was a failure on every level. Whereas this movie, I think, is the smartest way you could have taken a property like this and rework it into like a modern, relevant story while still remaining thrilling and true to the character.
Yeah. So a little background on this movie. This is starring Elizabeth Moss as Cecilia, who is the victim of domestic abuse, leaves her husband in the middle of the night, and later finds out that he killed himself, apparently. And she's left with all of his money, which they say like in the description, all of his money, but it's like $5 million.
Yeah.
And this guy is supposed to be like a tech billionaire.
You've seen his fucking house. You've seen the cars that he drives. Like, yeah.
Costs more than $5 million. Sell that and get more than that. Mm-hmm. So, and then she starts becoming haunted by some kind of presence, and she realizes that maybe her ex is not dead. So that's the premise of the movie. It's executed very well. I really enjoyed pretty much every part of this movie, except we'll have a spoiler section towards the end, because I really think people should see this movie. Even though the ending falls off the rails a little bit, I think it's very well executed. And honestly, it was in the running for the first like 75% of it to be like one of the all timers, I feel like.
Yeah, I thought this movie was fantastic. It's weird. Like, I know a lot of people are classifying it as a horror film. To me, it felt more like a thriller. Because I think that you don't have as much existential dread as something like Hereditary. but I do think this movie actually reminded me quite a bit of Hereditary, in the sense that because like the premise is there's an invisible man, there are things happening on screen that you cannot see. And like, it's kind of implied that in almost every scene that there are characters, the invisible man is there watching them too.
Yes.
And Leigh Whannell does such a good job directing this film by implementing long takes and just like tracking shots that are cool, but also just like moving the camera, panning across rooms very slowly and letting you kind of just like Like, he expects the audience to be looking for something out of the ordinary, for, like, some distortion of light or just something moving in the corner of the screen. And it reminded me a lot of Hereditary, because that was one of my favorite parts of that film, was how Ari Aster just used, like, these super dark scenes that have just enough exposure to see, like, some demon or some person out in the corner just, like, smiling at the audience. And it's so unsettling to look around and just see it on your own. I had so much fun watching this movie.
Yeah, it's very unnerving. His use of empty space, or, you know,
negative space.
Yeah, apparently empty space was very effective, and just really has you on edge the entire time of trying to think of, I'm being shown this. Is something moving? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, why am I being shown this?
Right. And at the beginning, you kind of feel like this is like a level of paranoia and a device used to empathize with the main character, who is righteously paranoid. Paranoid. So you're kind of like, okay, I understand how she's feeling. There could be something there. And then later on in the movie, you start to realize this camera is just telling me the truth. It's telling me what is actually there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when it really, no pun intended, upgrades itself and becomes very, very effective. There is everything I think that you want out of a horror movie like this, a pretty basic concept that's just executed very well. A kind of, oh, what if there was someone who wanted to hurt you and you couldn't see them? And then taking every aspect of that and just really executing it very well on a very human level.
Yeah, it's so psychological. And I think that this monster works so well. The movie works so well because of how thematically cohesive it is. Like you were saying, her paranoia is, I think, one of the focal points of the narrative, and justifiably so. Like, she was a victim of abuse, and I think that was all very well portrayed. She's a very sympathetic character, and this movie does a great job of conveying that paranoia to the audience through the camera work. But I love that this movie feels so grounded. Again, up until like probably the third act, it goes a little bit off the rails, but for the first two acts, this movie is so grounded because it's all just the psychological terror happening in like a normal suburban home. There's nothing extravagant happening. There's just this constant sense of fear that, like, oh, he's watching her, but you don't know where he is. You don't know what he's gonna do.
Yeah, he is there. There's someone that is watching you, and you can't see them, but they can see you. And they want to hurt you. That is a very terrifying concept.
Yeah.
And I think that he pretty much nails every part of it for milking the concept for scares.
Yeah. And I also just love that not only is it like the physical reality of an invisible person being there to terrorize you when you least expect it, but the psychological horror really comes in when she starts trying to tell people, like, no, there's an invisible man fucking with me right now. And nobody believes her. And it is such it's a pretty blatant metaphor for like the Me Too movement, but I think it's so effective and it gets its point across so well. And it is honestly, I think, the best monster property to do this type of story with.
Right, definitely. And it's a pure primal fear of, I'm trying to tell people something that's very serious and no one will believe me.
Yeah.
That's like a classic, like, Hitchcockian man against like the world. Oh, it wasn't me. The real killer's on the loose. You know, they're like, hey, you with the knife. That's like, no, I didn't do it.
Yeah.
That is the entire crux of the movie. And it's executed so well. Elizabeth Moss really carries this movie very well.
Yeah, her performance is great.
Yeah, she's overqualified, but she brings it.
Hey, man, all these people, like Toni Collette, she was overqualified for Hereditary. All these people fucking bring it.
Yeah, she brought it. Turned out really well. I'm very excited to see her get more recognition, especially after she had a really great year last year. She was in Her Smell, which was criminally overlooked.
Yeah, I still haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. She was in Us. She's been around a while. Handmaid's Tale. Like, she's really carrying a lot of niche dramatic roles.
Oh, yeah.
But not quite like a star you know?
Not yet. Well, I think it's, she's also a Scientologist.
So she should be like an A-lister.
You would think. It is harder to root for her, though, because of that.
That is true. Do you think that in this new age of Hollywood wokeness,
people are afraid to cast Scientologists?
Yeah, or if we're starting to peel back the layers of, oh, like, Hollywood is liberal, so they're not doing anything bad. Like, oh, no, now we know, like, yeah, Harvey Weinstein, maybe one of the big, like, not one of the biggest liberals, but a very active liberal fundraiser, mm-hmm. was also a serial rapist. Like, we're starting to peel it back where, no, you got to really show us
that you're not a piece of shit.
Right. I do know Elizabeth Moss is Australian, right?
I have no idea. You could have fooled me. I've only ever heard her do an American accent.
Yeah, I thought, because she's in that show, if you ever saw it, Top of the Lake.
Nope.
Yeah, where she plays a like New Zealand cop. Seems like she was born in the U.S., so I'm wrong. She has British citizenship.
Okay. So,
yeah, her father is English.
Apparently, the rumor is that she's dating Tom Cruise now, too, which is hilarious.
That would be weird.
Is Scientology.
True.
Yep. Holy, she was married to Fred Armisen?
That is also weird.
This is, wow. What a fucking rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's, man. Anyway,
enough about her backstory.
Yeah, she's really great in this movie. Yeah,
I think everyone was really good in this movie. I think everyone gave in killer performances.
Yeah, the way too jacked cop, he was great. Is it just me who noticed that?
No, he's jacked, but like, I don't know. I expect everyone in my movies to be jacked.
Yeah, but he was like on Yaya like level, like jacked. We're like, why is this random dude just
he's
jacked?
He's a cop.
Right. All the cops I usually see are fucking ripped.
His
right?
steward like, is justice. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it's all about. This movie, very good, very intense, dramatic. I really like everything that's going on with it. Anything else to say, Rob, before we get into the spoilers? I think everyone should see this movie.
Yeah,
I think this
agree.
Is a very effective horror film.
I think this is one of the best of the year so far and will probably remain one of the best of the year moving forward. Highly recommend everyone go see this movie before you hear about any of the twists that we're about to get into.
Yeah. All right. So if you're not into spoilers, stop listening right now. So... this movie was really amazing for the first like 75%. I think the ending really fumbled it.
See, I didn't feel that badly about the ending. I thought it was all like it all worked for me.
Yeah, it was fine. It worked generally, but it seemed like the caliber of movie that it was ended when the brother was shot. And it seemed like from then on, we got an ending that seeked to wrap things up, but didn't quite know how to be as clever as it had been, because suddenly the whole movie shifts. It's not about an invisible man. It's about a real domestic abuser.
Yeah. I mean,
everyone can see.
That's what it was about, but it was still like this. I don't know. One, I think the ending could have gone a couple of ways. I thought when I was watching the movie after she shot the brother and they revealed that it wasn't him in the suit, I was like, oh, did he find the other suit that she hid? Because like I remember that she hid that suit and I was like, okay, they have to come back to this at some point. So
right,
I thought this
too.
Movie was either going to end incredibly darkly where they kill the brother. Everyone thinks that the problem is solved. And then like the abuser still comes back because the world thinks he's dead and continues to just like fuck with her forever.
Yes, I think that could have gone that way. I think it went for a very let's close the loop on this and give her a closure that seemed kind of unearned. Not unearned.
I don't know. I think it was very earned. I think that felt very empowering. And like they set, it's not an ending to me that came out of nowhere because they did set up her hiding the suit mid movie. So I'm like, okay, they need to come back to this somehow. I do think it was kind of interesting, like, oh, they just kind of glaze over the fact that the whole world thought this dude was dead, and then it turns out he was just, like, bound up in his basement, I guess.
Yeah, so why'd he fake his, like, how do they explain how he faked his own death?
I guess they just explained that his brother faked it. Like, that's probably just what he said. He's like, oh, yeah, he threw his brother under the bus.
Yeah,
he would have just said, like, yeah, my brother fabricated those pictures. He used my technology to fabricate those pictures. That's the thing about this movie, too, is, like, this is a movie where you have a suit that can turn completely invisible, so I'm willing to suspend disbelief a certain amount, because it is kind of, like, it teeters on sci-fi, which I kind of like. I'm glad it wasn't just, like, a biological thing, like, oh, I injected myself with a serum, and now I'm invisible. I like that it was a suit. It still made it feel more grounded. And I think it helped with... it helped with the logistics too, where, like, the moment to me that it got me was, like, when she took the Uber to his house. I was like, how did he get there if he's invisible? Like, did he just call an Uber and then get in while still invisible? But then I'm like, oh no, it's a suit. So he just takes the suit off and then calls an Uber and gets to the house too, or, like, whatever.
But wouldn't they have shut off his credit cards? If this guy's dead,
he's probably got back. He was using his brother's credit card. Like, yeah, that's the thing. His brother was in on the game.
Right.
And, like, that's one of the gotcha moments where it's like, oh, like, his brother gives the speech about him hating his brother as much as she did, because he was just, like, the punching bag before he met her. Then it's like, oh, no, turns out he was in it all along.
Yeah.
Also, you're pregnant.
Yeah, it was an interesting pivot towards, like, why all of this is happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm still like, is that his whole... It seemed like he went through a lot to target her, which I think it all makes sense, because this guy's, like, a sociopath. But just the way that it's kind of brought down is in a very, like, oh, she goes and he kind of reveals that he did everything. And then she goes to the bathroom for a regular amount of time and has time to put on the suit.
Yeah, like, she just said she's washing up. And that's, I don't know how long it takes to put that suit on or not, but.
Right. It seemed like it was pretty skin tight. Like,
yeah. So she just takes her clothes off, puts on the suit. Bim, boom, bop.
Yeah, sure. And then, goes back and.
And he kills himself.
Yeah.
I liked that ending. I thought it was, like, emotionally cathartic, and I'm glad that she got that resolution, that she didn't just, like, live the rest of her life traumatized.
Right.
I think it feels like a fucking superhero film, because she has the suit now, and I'm like, she could be a vigilante. Let her meet Russell Crowe.
That would be a very weird pivot for the sequel, is if she... If she starts fighting crime,
dude, I just want her to become the Invisible Woman and just start targeting, like, abusive people.
That could be interesting.
Yeah, I think that is where the sequel goes. I just don't know how you set up a villain.
Right.
Because it's like, wins. She has an invisible, like, invisible suit.
I mean, that's what we thought about the abuser. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was, like, the biggest scare moment, or, like, your favorite part of the movie, your favorite, like, scare?
Honestly, there's nothing really that scary. I think there were definitely moments of dread, but nothing like... One of the things I liked about this movie so much is there weren't any real jump scares.
Well, there was one.
Was it, like, when they were in the rain and, like, he just, like, appears when she's chasing him in the rain? Which jump scare are you thinking of?
I'm thinking of when she throws the paint on him.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Sure. I guess that counts. I saw that in the trailers, though, so I was like, okay, well, oh, I know this is coming. But I liked all those scenes, like, when he initially starts fucking with her, and, like, she's taking pictures, and you just see her, like, pulling the blanket, and he's just standing on it. I'm like, fucking well done. Like, I liked the, more than the jump scares, I just liked the feeling of dread that the movie really set. I loved all the scenes, like, when she calls his phone and you hear it ringing in the attic.
Drops.
Yeah, I'm like, this is so good. But really, I thought that the whole pregnancy, like, the pregnancy reveal was great. I think that was probably the most, like, stomach churning moment for me Because the thing I ran through my head too is like, oh fuck, did he rape her like when she was sleeping? Like, is that what he was using the suit for?
Yeah.
But then they revealed that like, oh no, it happened before she ran away because he replaced her pregnancy pills. But yeah, just seeing like what his game was, like why he was doing this to her was
fucked.
Yeah. God, this movie's fucking great. I love this movie.
I think what really elevated the movie for me was the scene in the restaurant.
Oh, right. Yeah.
With the sister.
Oh, that was like legitimately upsetting to see that. And then just to like see the knife like into her hand.
Yeah. And you're just like, oh, I was like, I was in the theater just like, oh, no,
there's so much happening. Not only like did you think this was a safe place because there's so many people around that it's her sister. And the fact that like not only is she being framed for murder, but she's also watching her sister bleed out in front of her.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's so much happening in this moment at once that this is just like, this is just dreadful.
Yeah, that was the really that was a turning point for me. When I'm like, this movie is elevated itself. It's so fucked.
Yeah. Oh, what a fucking good movie.
Yeah, I'm very happy. I hope they keep doing this. I really want to see what Leigh Whannell.
I'm going with Leigh Whannell.
Yeah, Leigh. I really want to see what he could do with like even $50 million. Like,
well, his next movie is an Escape from New York remake, which I'm guessing will have a decent budget.
Really?
Snake Plissken.
Have they recently announced this? Like, I feel like I have not.
I don't know how recently. Apparently, the last update was in February 2019.
Okay. I'm all in. I'm all in with him doing way more stuff. I've been very happy with his work so far. So looking forward to seeing him in more stuff. Looking forward to Elizabeth Moss, even though she is a Scientologist.
Looking yeah, she's forward still to good. Seeing her. You know, I still watch Tom Cruise movies.
Yeah, exactly. Don't want to apply that double standard.
Yeah. Fuck, I just don't want to go watch Upgrade now.
Yeah. Hey, anytime. What do we got coming up next week, though, Rob? I think
Pixar movie.
Oh, yeah. Wait, Onward, correct?
Yes. What is your vote? That new fucking Ben Affleck vehicle?
I'm a shill. Sad Affleck. I want to see Ben Affleck as an alcoholic basketball coach.
This is his honey boy. Like, this is just his life.
I am so excited. I don't give a shit about this Pixar movie. Onward. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be fine. It looks fine.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about basketball, but I give a shit about Batfleck.
Exactly. This is a part of the Ben Affleck comeback that will end in him directing every Batman movie ever.
Oh, dude, if he comes around to direct a Robert Pattinson Batman movie, I can die happy.
That would be entirely too much all at once.
He can have a cameo as old Batman.
Yeah, no. Get me a Batman Beyond movie and give me Batfleck as old Batman.
And also directing.
I'm all in on that. What was what's that Batman Beyond story where the Joker comes back?
Oh, Return of the Joker. Yep.
Yep. Quite the original title.
Truly.
That could be like, give it 5 or 10 years. There's no way we're not getting like a Batman Beyond movie eventually.
So who plays the Return of Joker? Is it Joaquin Phoenix? Is it Mark Hamill? Obviously not Heath Ledger. Obviously not Jared Leto.
I don't think you have a returning actor for it.
Mm.
I think you have somebody new. Because it's somebody who seems like the old Joker, but is like slightly different.
Yeah.
You know, he just like looks updated and they're like, how did this happen?
My vote is for Eric Andre to play the Joker.
That'd be too like, I would be like too afraid of what he was going to do.
I know. I want a horror movie Joker with Eric Andre.
Yeah.
His white face paint is just ranch.
Can he act? Has he been like acting in anything before?
Only comedic stuff. He's never done any like real drama.
Yeah.
But I think comedians are all good dramatic actors. Like, we know this from Robin Williams, from Adam Sandler.
It's time to give Eric Andre his due.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Kevin James is the Joker.
But maybe next week we'll come through with a double feature.
Yeah. We'll see how much time we have.
Yeah, exactly. Well, until next week, nuts, it's been real. See you next week.